Hey, everyone. If managing your business financials is kind of making your hair gray, you don't want to miss this web class April 8th featuring the one and only Matt Reisinger. Matt and I are going to be teaming up to teach you the least painful way to track your budgets, do proper forecasting, and monitor overhead using our foolproof templates. What good margins actually look like in your industry so you can take out the guesswork and have something to benchmark yourself against. And lessons learned from Matt on his way to becoming an industry titan. If you know that now is the time to start making changes, but the thought of it kind of makes you nauseous, this web class is for you. April 8th, register in the link in the description, and I'll see you there.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. Openness and transparency are values many of us espouse, but how open and honest are you really? Like, does your crew understand budgeted hours versus actual hours? How about the projected gross profit on the project they just started? How about last year's net profit? We know people play better when they know the score. So how come so many business owners are so tight-lipped about their numbers? In today's conversation, we're going to take a different approach. We're talking to Jacob and Ryan Markowicz, Rick Van Espen, and Zach Neufeld. And they run their landscaping business, Creative Roots, completely open book, which means every person on the team is taught and shown every metric the business tracks, and they know how every dollar is made. And I thought it'd be really enlightening to get the employees' perspective for once on what transparency and openness do for the culture they work in, their feelings about work, and its effect on performance. So without further ado, let's dive in with the crew from Creative Roots. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Ryan, Rick, Zach, and Jacob, welcome to the show. This is like a party podcast.
Thanks for having us. We love parties.
Okay, Ryan, I want to start with you to sort of preface this conversation. We gotta set this up. We gotta frame this for the listeners so they fully get what we're trying to talk about here. This conversation is fundamentally about why openness and transparency matters in a business. But what's unique about this conversation is we're going to talk about this from the perspective of team members, right? We're going to talk about this from Jacob's perspective, from Rick's perspective, from Zach's perspective. I think it's kind of fine if business owners and leaders talk about how, you know, their ideas are the great. There's plenty of content like that out there on the internet already. I think what's interesting is let's look at this from the lens of somebody inside the business. Like, what's the value of it? Why is it important? What is it? How does it make your life easier? All that stuff. And so that's the thesis today. But to set that up, I think, Ryan, you should start by just explaining to our listeners just briefly, like Creative Roots, what you guys do, the open book stuff, the Great Game of Business stuff, and your guys' overall recipe that I think delivers openness and transparency in a very, very unique way compared to the other businesses that I've looked at.
All right. So yeah, I started a business 30 years ago. We just had our 30th anniversary last year, and mowing lawns, and it turned into a design build, and it grew and it grew. And we, you know, we started having the same type of troubles that anybody might have when they're trying to scale a business around that $1.5 million mark. I ran into the age old thing where I just couldn't be everywhere all the time. I didn't have a way of sharing my purpose and vision and why. In fact, I didn't have it documented. You know, I wasn't budgeting all that stuff. In essence, we were growing faster than our business practices, and the business was running me instead of me running the business. And so in general, I felt lonely. The communication really wasn't there. I was losing people just like anybody else. And so I stumbled across something called Open Book Management as it was pioneered by the people at the Great Game of Business down in Springfield, Missouri. And it really changed the way I looked at things. It really, what it did was it gathered up in a systematic way the best business practices from communication to identifying key performance metrics and drivers and how to profit share properly and how to hold huddles or meetings, as some people might call them. And it really built the foundation for how we moved forward. And I remember someone saying to me one time, he said, well, you're in business with these other people. Why not talk business with the people you're in business with? I said, geez, that makes a whole hell of a lot of sense. Here I am going off to, you know, owner retreats or just me and other owners talking. And then I'm coming back trying to deliver this stuff to people who didn't see it firsthand or hear it firsthand. I said, I'm just going to start talking business with the people I'm in business with. And lo and behold, it just kind of grew. And we just started growing business people. Mm-hmm. Is that enough?
Yeah, it's a great entry point. Like I would chime in by saying, like, I've been to your guys' building, and on the walls there are scorecards and stats, and there's the like explicit and written goals and visions of every individual person on the team. There are these high involvement planning meetings where it's not just like the owner like charting the course, it's the entire team like in a room in a very structured fashion working on strategy together. There's so this whole like gamification that you guys do. In fact, Juan, I will get some videos from these guys. I will get sort of some images and some pictures and some videos of their shop that we can put on screen for so our YouTube audience can kind of see this. Maybe we can edit that later. But it's just a very, very unique take on this. It's very refreshing. And I think the value in this conversation comes from hearing like what being in an environment like that does for Jacob, for Zach, and for Rick. And so, Rick, we'll start with you. Like, let's just maybe go back to the beginning. Like, where were you working before Creative Roots, and what drew you to this organization versus the others that you looked at and the one you were at before?
Yeah, of course. So I've been in the landscape industry for almost 12 years at this point. I did my horticultural technician in Ontario. When I finished that, I traveled around for a bit and was kind of just nomading around doing whatever work I can with landscaping companies in Australia. And then when I came back, I needed a job. So I was kind of looking for a place to set down roots and ended up at Creative Roots. But when I was still working in Windsor, the companies that I was working for, I was working just as a laborer on a hardscape division. And that was just your basic labor work, right? You show up to work, you punch in, finish the day, and you go home. There wasn't anything more to it than that, really.
Mm-hmm. Did you find something really like was it noticeable in the interviews that you were having with Ryan or whoever hired you, like the different sort of vibe around the building, their different ethos towards empowering the staff?
Yeah, absolutely. And even before the interview process, like I heard Ryan speak on a couple of podcasts explaining how he manages the company with open book management, and that there are opportunities to be an intellectual in a trade business, mm-hmm. right? And that there's opportunities to use your brain every day and more than just thinking about what we're doing, it's how we're doing it. Mm-hmm. And during the interview process with Matt, you know, it's our construction manager, it was clear that that's brought down throughout the entire company. Because in the interview process, it gets laid out what the huddle rhythm is, what the financial meeting rhythm is, and all of that stuff is laid out for you, right?
Zach, same question to you. Like, paint the picture for what drew you to this culture versus the one you were at before.
So I knew Ryan and Jake throughout middle school and high school playing soccer. And we were good buddies for years and years before I started working for Creative Roots. So when I started, it was the situation where I wanted a summer job straight out of high school and didn't really have a plan, you know, like didn't have a plan outside of the next 6 months kind of thing, just going to work and then figure it out after that. And I remember my first day was out in the field having a great day with a couple guys on site. And then we had to leave early to go to a financial meeting, sorry. And I had no idea what to expect. And it was definitely a lot to take in at first, seeing, like you said, the scoreboards and the stats. And I didn't know what it meant at the beginning. But what I did know is from my first day is that there's opportunities in this company for everybody.
What impact, Jacob, I'll go to you on this. What impact does this openness, transparency, everyone understanding the numbers, have on the culture overall? Like, is the vibe in the building different? And if so, can you describe that?
Yeah, I think the biggest element to it is the just the camaraderie and just that, like you said, the openness. When everyone can speak the same language and we're all on the same page, you just kind of get on the same wavelength and everything just seems to hum along very smoothly, right? And even at times when we start to get disjointed a little bit, say we, for once in a blue moon, miss a meeting, I think a lot of people end up feeling the disconnect in that, right? Especially if they, you know, were gone for something, maybe they had an appointment, it just happened to land on that time, then they come the next month or the next meeting or whatever, whenever it is, and they really enjoy it again, you know, get some food, say hi to people, you know, and just sit, just kind of sit in and really kind of take it all in and bring up their opinion if they have one.
Mm-hmm. Rick or Zach, do you guys want to weigh in on this cultural piece? Like what you got, how do people interact? How do people feel about their work, communication style, all that stuff?
Yeah, I can chime in on that. I think the big thing with the camaraderie is the alignment, right? Because everybody knows what's going on financially, and they have a line of sight on what they do and how that impacts the numbers. Well, then everybody aligns their decisions based on what the goal is. So if we're trying to hit a certain revenue per hour, guys are thinking, okay, can I upsell while I'm on a job site? Can I perform this task more efficiently so that we gain a higher revenue per hour? We're putting in more materials. I think that's the big thing is alignment, right? And then there's the profit share side of it, which creates the connection. And that's in some way, it's kind of our way of pay for performance, but the pay for performance is based on the performance of the company.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about, Rick, I've heard you say this a few times, this concept of line of sight. What does that mean?
Yeah, line of sight is pretty simple. It's how do my actions that I'm doing on a job site impact the financial numbers, the bottom line. That's really it. And what are all the steps in between? And can I actually see that? If I'm taking 2 hours to do a job that should take an hour, well, is the reason because I'm slacking off, or is there another reason for that? And can we explain the story and figure out how to improve that process from the story, from what happened on site that day?
So I'll ask you this follow-up question, but any of you other three, please feel free to chime in on this. What are the things that facilitate line of sight? Because people talk about this all the time, but if you go inside the businesses, other businesses, and I have, part of my French, but like most people on the site don't have a clue how their action right now connects to the bottom line of the business. And that's not the fault, by the way, that is not the fault of the employee. That's the fault of the business or the system or the culture. So it's like, this is one of these things that like sounds good, but people don't ever double click in on and say, how do we solve this? How do we create line of sight so that this laborer understands intimately why the tempo that he walks from the trailer to his little workstation on whatever he's working at matters, like in terms of dollar figures. So what is it for you, Rick? And again, anyone can layer in on this. What about you guys? What about the system that you guys follow really facilitates the line of sight piece?
One of the big things that we've implemented are our Monday morning project management meetings that we have with the team, where we review the project management sheet that have our work areas broken down with percentages completed. That allows us, and in that sheet, it tells us how many work hours are allotted per area. So that if we're working on an area, we can really track and say, okay, are we on pace to finish this off properly to make sure that we hit our revenue per hour number.
So there's a really good system to clarify, like, this is the goal, this is the actual, here's the gap, and you guys are paying very careful attention to that at all times.
Yeah, exactly. We're reviewing that on a weekly basis with all of the site leads, and then on a weekly basis with our individual teams on site specific to each site.
That's really cool. Zach, Jacob, anything to add?
Totally, I'll add to that. So what Rick is describing would be like a construction driver. What is construction department doing to drive to the critical number, kind of kind of thing. So maintenance has them, design has them, and we call these drivers. Another thing that's off the financial line is the culture, like we were saying, and the camaraderie. What we do is we calendarize fun, good events, we call them. So these go from pool parties, barbecue after work with a beer, bowling, golf. We thought it was, well, we know it's important to develop those connections. So we made it an important item and a driver for our people.
Do you guys enjoy like the extra? Because look, somebody could listen to this and go, this is extra work, extra bandwidth. You know, my employees wouldn't want to do that. They just want to put their head down and work. I guarantee you somebody listening to this podcast right now, they're just like, yeah, this wouldn't work. Do you guys enjoy the extra work? Do you like thinking about optimizing equations on the job site on the weekends? Is that a false belief, I guess is what I'm saying? Is there a level of like buy-in that creates? And can you maybe talk about the feelings you have towards work and whether or not that belief system around my people just want to do their job and go home is true or not?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk to that. I mean, I hear it quite a bit is I just want to do my job and go home. Not from our guys, you know, some people for sure, they're not there and this isn't for everybody. And that's totally fine. Not everyone has to be an owner or a partner or a manager. That's cool. But what everyone who is bought into the company and doesn't mind an extra little bit of brain work, everything's laid out for people to observe, learn, and grow. And honestly, it happens naturally, Benji. I was that guy. I wanted to work 11-hour days, make a bunch of money, and go home.
Right.
But because of the culture I was surrounded by, it changes your belief system and it becomes less work because it's less stressful because you know where you're at. There's not guesswork. Your teammates have your back because they know where they're at. And you're not doing it alone. It's always a open field for everyone to pass the ball. You know what I mean?
You guys have, as a part of your recipe, Jacob, I'll ask you this question. There's a very interesting thing that you guys do. I don't know if it's like, what do you call it? The owner's track? Like there's a way in which you make equity or profit sharing available to employees after a certain period of time. And there's a process that people follow. Can you just give us a high level rundown of how that works and actually probably more importantly, why that works?
Yeah, for sure. So they're talking about two slightly different things. We'll isolate them. So there's the path to partnership, which is essentially, you know, after someone's been working for us and meets a certain amount of requirements, say it's a couple of years with the company and that kind of thing. I don't have to give all the examples, but once they meet a set of requirements and they're wanting to move closer to a buy-in, they just have a track that they're going to take, right? And it's going to come application time where we're going to accept new applicants. You know, they're going to fill out some forms, some other stuff. But before any of that, everybody is in this gain share pool. So everyone's out there doing their work. And we try to teach the understanding through the financial literacy that the better the company does, the better they're also going to do at the same time, right? And it's almost like Rick was talking about before about the work on reward system. It's that grouped into the entire company as a whole. So no one kind of silos themselves out. You know, I'm just going to do it for me. It's we're doing it for everybody and we're all gaining out of that. And so what that really means is people go to work and they try their best to increase the revenue per hour or whatever metric that we are kind of starting to look at and focus on at that time through mini games and stuff that we're trying to kind of pinpoint. And through that, we end up benefiting the bottom line, which we have a plan through our high involvement planning meetings. And that's another thing. But we essentially draw a line in the sand and say, hey, this is where we think a good win is. And through the year, as we're working towards that win, we don't change the line in the sand. We just keep working towards it. And if we get past that line of sand, we believe that everyone should share equally in that outcome.
So there's two different things. There is a profit share for everyone. And then there's also separately a track to become an owner, which I think all three of you have gone through.
Yeah.
Yeah, correct.
That's really, really cool.
So essentially, yeah, it's like we say that there's a threshold that the company has to meet in order to remain profitable, in order to have the sense of security that everybody should collectively have in order to maintain what they have as a job and move into a career. But then anything over that threshold, we share 50-50, 50% to the company, 50% to the employees.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So this is all very structured and premeditated and pretty easy to follow.
Yeah, no guesswork, just like Rick and Zach were talking about.
You guys were telling me offline, like Rick, about some of your favorite like facets of the system that you guys follow. And you were talking about the departmental huddles. Is that what you meant on those Monday morning meetings, or are these different?
No, these are even different. These are different from those.
Okay, tell me about them.
The departmental huddles. We have those twice a month, where we just get together with the entire construction division, or maintenance has their own and design has their own as well. And in that meeting, we're reviewing how each individual project is doing and then how the overall division is doing. So that goes back into what I was saying about line of sight,
mm-hmm.
right? So we have project one, project two, project three. They all do X, Y, and Z in revenue, and that gives us our divisional revenue.
And Zach, you were telling me about, there's a certain way that you guys do goal setting, and then you guys have these mini games, which I'm really curious about.
Yeah, totally. So goal setting is really cool at Creative Roots because everyone has work-related goals that we'll all write up on a blackboard and hang it up by the bathrooms. So everyone is always, every time Roop...
They're like chalkboards. They're like... Black totally. Chalkboards.
So every time someone walks past, they can look at anyone's name on the board and see what they're working on within the company. And also outside the company, we'll have some personal goals up there. So, you know, everyone's always asking each other what's going on. How's that goal going? Did you pass your test? Did you get the new car? Whatever it is. So that's cool. Again, that just brings in those relationships even closer, you know.
That's really cool.
And then
mini games.
Mini games is also something that is one of my favorite aspects. Basically, we target a system that we want to alter, whether it's not working or there is no system, we'll create a system and we'll call this a mini game. So we'll rally as a team. Maintenance usually has their own and construction, but we usually have a company-wide mini game going all the time too. So the mini game is broken down to a 90-day target. And every 30 days, there's going to be a check to see, hey, are we hitting our 30-day mark? Are we hitting the 60-day target? And then have we finished the game at 90 days and either created a system or bettered a system?
Mm-hmm.
With those targets, every 30 days, there's going to be a reward for the team. Usually going out and doing something as a team or celebrating as a team in some way. Just this last year, we went out and played pool and got dinner.
Do people like those? Do they find them gimmicky? Are people like, oh, grown, I have to do a mini game? Or like, is there buy-in?
Well, there's totally buy-in because we're the ones who make them. So if they're complaining, they're just ratting themselves out.
Right.
So the team will come together before the mini game's even built, and we'll build it. We'll create a theme and we'll create goals and rewards as a team.
What are some, what do you guys think are some challenges about running this format? Like, it all sounds great, what do you think is, if somebody wants to, quote unquote, open the books, peel back the kimono, be more transparent, let their team in on numbers and strategy and planning, you know, maybe even one day create like an owner's track like you guys have done. What challenges should they be prepared to confront under this model?
I mean, I can speak a little bit to that. I couldn't tell you exactly what it was like in the beginning because I wasn't there when my dad Ryan was first starting that. But from the struggles of what I've heard is, you know, there are going to be people that aren't really on board.
Yeah.
Right. And you have to accept the fact that that's just the case and it's going to happen everywhere. And that's also a part of, you know, weeding people out in the process. right? And it's, you know, some of the qualities and things that you have to, that come right along with that is the discipline. You know, once you realize that, hey, this is the way I believe that the company should go to benefit all of everybody, you got to stick with it, right? It's not just something that just comes and goes. It's all the time, every day. And people start to recognize if you're not following through. They really do. And it's important.
Yeah. Ryan, I'll go to you on this. Like, you've sort of gone, you probably have the best before and after, given mm-hmm. your story. Like, you know, things that come to mind, I'm like, is conflict management sort of a thing you have to take more seriously? Because look, we're all in this together and we're locked in. Does it ever get political because somebody wants to be an owner, but they can't be an owner? Like, what are some of the things that you think you have to be prepared to work harder at under this modality?
I think Jake said some important things. When we have a specific system, you know, 10 specific steps for high involvement planning that go out, that kind of rinse and repeat on an annual basis, that we don't miss any of those, that we never move forward without a certain level of buy-in, which is 80% on any particular financial plan or sales plan or something like that across a company-wide. And through that, you know, through that whole methodology and process of communication, you end up building a lot of trust with people. And so honestly, like amongst the owners now, and there's six of us now, I don't think we've ever had a conflict, which almost sounds ridiculous to say, like I'm selling a fairy tale, but we've just learned to make decisions on a consensus basis and to have the respect and the trust in each other and the openness to make sure that people have a platform to speak their opinion and work towards that. Does that help?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It's you know what, Benji, it's honestly, it's open book management, it's best practices, it's great game, it's lean, it's SOPs, it's all that stuff. But it's the philosophy of connecting being a human and what humans need, which is trust and respect and a place to grow and to satisfy their natural desire to win with making money. You're just connecting the dots between being human and making money. And I'm telling you, you don't know who the star. And one thing I really see as a differentiator in the way we do it is that we bring people right from day one in every corner of the company and get them involved in some way, whether that's just sitting in on the financial meetings and hearing how the company's doing financially, or it's asking them to actually report on a number on a weekly or biweekly basis. Because I'm telling you, you do not know who the star is on the field until you hand them the ball. You don't. I'm telling you, I didn't think Zach was going anywhere. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm telling you. And honestly, like sometimes I sit in the back of the room and at some of these huddles and these three guys on the screen, and there's another three or six or nine or more in our company. And the things that are coming out of their mouth, I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe it. Like not one of you guys is 30 yet. Right. You know, and you guys, I've left the company in their hands.
Mm-hmm. And it continues to grow with quite an ambitious growth plan over the next 5 years too.
Like,
it feels like you guys are just getting started.
I think so. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this, and you know, maybe you have an answer to this, maybe you don't. I mean, it's an interesting thing to just brainstorm for a second. Like, where do you think the fear of sharing numbers comes from? Where do you think the tendency for business owners, and I don't think it's just in the trades, I think it's anywhere, there's a tendency to sort of do this thing where they drive off to this cabin in the woods and they bring this huge whiteboard and they kind of hunker down for a few days and build this amazing plan. And then they come back to find out that the team doesn't feel included, isn't excited, and isn't really going to help them execute. So like that's a very like real situation that people find themselves in, not sharing numbers, not sharing what the desired gross profit is, not sharing budgeted versus actual. Where do you think that comes from? Like, why do business, if it's so obvious that this is a better way to do it, where does the fear of doing it come from? And I'll just, Rick, I'll pick on you.
Yeah, I think it's mainly comes from an individual's ego. You know, if you spend a lot of time building something up, it's hard to give it away to somebody. But at the end of the day, it's easier to have somebody rowing the boat with you than rowing the boat by yourself. Mm. So I think really the ego is the big thing on why people don't want to bring the numbers to everybody else, because they just believe that I know it all.
Like, do you think it's like there's a belief system that they wouldn't get it? Like, oh, my technician is like, this is above their head or something. Like, this, the owner has this attitude that, you know, it's not worth my time to explain this stuff or teach this stuff because it's, you know, it's above their pay grade. Like, is that what you mean by ego?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. And, you know, that just makes me think of something that Ryan has been saying to me since day one is, with every set of hands, you get a free brain.
Yeah.
And people want to be intellectual. People want to use their brain. They want to think about things in a deeper level with critical thinking processes. So the main driver behind open book management is to facilitate that thinking and give people the opportunity to. And the one thing you mentioned is that, yeah, you always have the guys that just want to come to work. They want to put their head down and they want to go home at the end of the day and they don't want to think about anything else. But you don't know if you have that guy or if you have a guy who wants to think about the money and help you make more money until you give him the opportunity to understand how the money works.
It's so well said. Yeah. It seems very obvious in hindsight, but there's obviously something blocking most business owners from doing that. I think too, guys, it might be a fear. You know, many instances, I think that there's fear. The owner is scared that if an employee finds out how much money the business makes, there's like a fear of jealousy or a fear of abandonment, or I don't really want them to know that this company, you know, netted 400 grand last year and I took 175 or like whatever. Ryan, you put your hand up there. Did you want to comment on it?
Yeah. Part of the education, Benji, and it's a super important aspect of it, is that helping people understand in life, no matter what you do, whether it's a stock market or a home or anything like that, you get paid for what you do. You get a return for what you own. Yes. And don't get me wrong. If you are an owner that thinks that they deserve 100 times more than the guy on the shovel, you might run into some problems. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you right now that what your employees, what most employees think that the business is making is much more than it's actually making. Across the board. In fact, if I went to you and said, as an owner, even you, Benji, like, hey, how much net income after everything's said, done, and paid, are you guys making as a percentage? What do you think that's going to be? And studies have showed it's a lot higher than what it actually is.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the classic disgruntled employee kind of like adage. It's like, these guys make so much money. It's like, you have no idea what their chart of accounts look like. You're like, no, you don't even have the faintest concept. Like, you don't even know like the list of insurances that they have to pay for just to be operational before they even sell a job or produce a job. So I get that. I get that sort of like, it's a level of naivete. But I wonder if you have any like tips for a business owner to start to have a conversation about this, to start to open up this set of ideas. You know, one framework that you described is the difference between, you know, you get paid for a role or what you do, and then you have a stake in the upside based on what you own. And those are two very separate things. Are there other elements or there other facets that make bridging this gap useful from owner to business, from owner to employee and vice versa?
I do believe there is. And that's, you know, in essence, what I do when I'm coaching businesses through the process. And there are particular, first and foremost, you can gamify a lot of this stuff. You know, we do things like the dollar exercise or, you know, best bang for your buck. There's small financial literacy tidbits that you can start working into your day to day. Without even being completely open book, that will help people connect the dots about how difficult it is to make a dollar in business. And you know, in essence, I don't think this is for everybody. Like you said, Benji, you need to have the belief in people, and you need to believe that that people support what they help create. Mm-hmm. And if you want to go with your team, they're going to have to understand the game they're in, the rhythms that we create through our huddle system, and meeting the PMs on the Mondays, the departmentals on every second week, the company wide once a month, the owners once a month, the twice a year sales and marketing, the annual high involvement planning meetings. These are a rhythm, and the rhythm of learning and engagement from people, whether it's in an annual employee only town hall, or it's an annual survey that asks for opinions from the employees on all different aspects, is that what you're doing is you're arming people with the knowledge to deal and make better decisions about how to handle the unfolding drama that comes along with operating a business on day to day. Yeah. Is the more experienced the player is on the field, the more often you're going to hand them, you're going to pass them the ball. That's the truth.
The other thing that I think needs to be said too, guys, is the business, the actual learning the business side is, I would say, orders of magnitude simpler than installing a really complex landscape or building a really fancy pool or engineering and installing a retaining wall or like doing a water feature. Like the stuff that you actually do with your hands, I think is more complex. Like the business side of it, I don't know, like business people, accountants, investors, financial people love to make all this sound a lot more complicated than it is. And the reality is you are selling stuff for a higher price than it costs you to make that stuff in every single business. And you can reskin that a million different ways. But do you guys have any examples or any stories or insight to share on that where, I don't know if an employee has maybe shared that epiphany. It's like, man, this is actually not that complicated. It's like pretty simple.
Yeah, totally. Like you can see it every year when we have the new hires in the first DP of the year, right? When we're going over numbers as a squad, and you can see them, you know, like looking so confused at the beginning of the meeting, like what am I even looking at? But the way we have it set out is very simple. Anyone can look at it and see if we're winning or losing, and just making it easy, because it is, mm-hmm. We don't have to overcomplicate it. And like Ryan said, if you gamify this into something that's relatable for people, it becomes, like you said, a lot easier than most of the shit that we do.
So here's maybe a fun like thought experiment to close on, guys. I hear this all the time. Young people don't want to work in the trades. Millennials suck, Gen Z sucks, whatever. You guys are studs. Rick, I met you at that Element event last year. I was like, this guy's awesome. And then I haven't met the rest of the team, but I've kind of sat in the back of the room and watched some of these meetings. Like this is like a really good crowd. Like these are clean cut. They're well spoken. I think that if I were to select maybe a swath of a different 8 people from Creative Roots, not you three, I think I'd probably feel similarly. I'm like, these people rule. So like what's missing here? Like when people say young people don't want to work, is that true? Or is that just a story that people tell themselves to make it more comfortable because they hate their staff and they've hired a bad team? Like what's going on here?
I think young people are looking for an opportunity now, right? So the more that you see with the evolution of AI and more and more job cuts in the white collar sector, a lot of people are turning to a blue collar trade and wanting to start a business, especially if you look at like the economic factors, like the baby boomers that are all retiring and a lot of businesses coming up for sale. You know, the thing that drove me to Creative Roots is I never wanted to start my own business, but what Creative Roots did for me was provide the foundation to build a company within a company.
Right.
So I think if more people view it as giving young people an opportunity to build a company within a company, whether that's an entire division or a crew, you know, those are all companies within the small company, then you're going to get better results for hiring people. But you have to give them the information that they need to be able to run that crew like a business.
Zach, Jacob, anything to layer on top there? Like, yeah, when people say young people don't want to work in the trades, is that BS or what?
I think it's a belief that's been coming along for the last 30 years where you got to go get an education, you got to do all this stuff, and you got to, you know, put yourself in this massive debt, right? And where you can just go out and get a trade job. And ideally, you have one that's going to provide opportunity like we try to provide for our people. And you can do just as well, if not better, in the long run, just by going into the trades, mm-hmm. right? And at the end of the day, each one of us is in business with ourselves, right? I'm running, if I'm not a partner in any company or anything, I'm in business with myself. I got my own revenue, that's my income. I got my own cost of goods. You know, that's some of those things that take to do that job, et cetera. I still got my own rent, all that stuff. But working together and, you know, opening this kind of, having the openness with everybody helps them realize that, and they start to do better within themselves. I just think it's really more people need to do that, because the trades is definitely coming back for a good swing.
Yeah, you, both of you have alluded to this idea. You're kind of referencing sort of this mass displacement of information workers over the next 6 years. Do you guys have a thought on the idea? This is a bit of, this is definitely a take, but I do believe this, and time will tell if this is true. Like, I absolutely can see, foresee, actually predict a reality where there's just going to be droves and droves and droves of very, you know, I'm just going to call it what it is, like average laptop people, workers who are getting displaced from businesses because a digital person or an agentic AI tool or some other form of LLM-based assistant can now do the marketing coordination that they were doing before, or can do the X-ray technician work that they were doing before. Like, I see that, and it's hard not to be cynical about that, but the one thing that is, I don't think, going to get touched for a while yet is working with your hands, working in the elements, being like, am I kind of out to lunch here? Do you guys see a world where there could be a whole massive talent supply that becomes available because AI has displaced people? And guess what? We have a shortage. We have a housing shortage. Businesses like yours need people like that really badly. Like, I'm very bullish. If I could buy blue collar businesses as a stock on the S&P 500, I would right now, because I'm like very mm-hmm. bullish on it over the next 10 years. Do you guys see the same thing?
Totally. And like, yeah, what I see with the young people coming up to Benji is that we all love money, but we also all want to have fun. And
yeah,
I think what robots can't recreate is the culture that an open book management style company can provide for people. And I think with the way the world is, I think everyone wants to enjoy where they're spending most of their day. You know what I mean?
It's really well said, Zach. Sorry to interrupt, but like people are looking for meaning, and people are looking for community. And unfortunately, I've said this before, but like, our schools aren't doing it, our politicians aren't doing it, our, like, all of the old institutions, like, you know, everyone works out on a Peloton, they don't go to the gym anymore. I'm like, I think it was all the time, like, where are people supposed to meet each other? Like, where are people supposed to make friends? And I think ultimately a lot of it is going to come, like, fall on the backs of small business owners, for better or for worse. And I think you nailed it, where it's like, people are actually going to be looking. Yes, it's about the money. Yes, it's about a career. Yes, it's about upside and growth. But it's also like, people need to feel like they're a part of a bigger fabric, a part of a bigger something. And I think that whether we're ready for it or not, it's going to be the job of business owners.
Totally. Totally agree. 100%.
It is. Yeah. Businesses are definitely the new educators. And we have an obligation and a responsibility to look at it that way. I know there's been so much done within our industry, in the green industry, leaders and trailblazers like Mark Bradley and you know, Kevin Scott and all those guys. They're just really, really giving so much opportunity for people to learn and tap into that intellectual strength that people have that usually lies dormant.
Yeah.
And, you know, it starts with the belief. Angie, you wouldn't have us on today if you didn't believe this would be a good show. We wouldn't be on here if we didn't believe you were a pretty good guy and it was going to be a good show. There's nothing that happens in life without a belief. And, you know, a good leader is one that wants to serve others. That's why servant leadership is kind of at one of the top metrics for us. And especially with the people I coach, other companies that I coach, we want to believe that people are able to, they want to, they can, and given the opportunity, they will grab the grass, take the education, grab the brass rings and tell you to get the hell out of the way. That's why I spend my winter down here in Mexico and I don't need to participate unless I'm asked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they've got it. And they were young guys too. And everyone's saying the kids don't these days, every generation said that. What do you think they were saying about in the 60s and 70s? Yeah. I mean, unless there's a black swan event like COVID, where really it was just hard on everybody, of course. I just say, like, I know there's good people out there. We have a whole bunch of them. And our retention rate is extremely high and people are gunning for actual ownership in our company. I'm saying, here, we got a recipe. Call it Open Book, call it Great Game, call it whatever you want. We have a recipe that works for us. We're good people that work hard to bring value to the marketplace and we want our share of the marketplace and we're going to do whatever it takes to get it. Mm-hmm. And we're going to bring people with us that want to go on that journey.
So I love it. This is a fun one to close on. We'll go in this order. Jacob, Zach, Rick, what if you can give one piece of advice to a business owner listening who wants to have better employees, who are more bought into results, who stay in the business for longer, what would you tell them to do?
I would say, don't be afraid. You know, the people that you're going to go out there and talk to about having this idea and getting them involved, those are going to be the people that really do buy in because they're going to see what they're creating at the exact same time, right? And then they're going to want to stay and then they're going to want to help replicate that idea and push it forward to the next people. So don't be afraid.
I would say share the why, share your goals and your motivations as a business owner and also ask them theirs and align yourself as a company.
And I would say, as soon as you have your plan for profit, anything that you make over that plan, make sure that you share it with the people that are making the profit for you.
Nailed it. Let's clip that and put it on socials. Thank you, boys. This has been a ton of fun. I really appreciate you all. Thanks for the wisdom and the time today, guys.
Cool. Thanks, Benji.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our channel, consider sharing this episode with another contractor who you think needs to hear it.